Hello and welcome to Viva Pod Vegas. Oh, thank you very much for listening. This is episode 3, Jailhouse Rock from 1957. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And with us today, we have our very first guest here on the podcast. You know her from, if you listen to every episode of the Podcast Network, probably the most recent episode to come out was our bombshell episode of Charlize Theron's Watch the Throne podcast. You also know her from Wistful Thinking and also the current lap of Too Fast, Too Forever. With us today, we have Kara Gail O'Regan. Hello, Kara.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us. I heard the rumor around the rumor mill, and by that I mean you told me this yesterday. This is the first Elvis movie you've ever seen.
The first Elvis movie I've ever seen. I have like no relationship with Elvis whatsoever, which was why I was interested in participating in this project, because I only know of Elvis as like a cultural artifact, like just reflected through other aspects of our culture, you know, like maybe the most contact with Elvis that I had was that one of the characters on Designing Women was a big Elvis fan, and also there was an Elvis impersonator that lived in my town. Whoa. And like that's the extent.
I love that, because it seems like for a while there, I mean, you couldn't find someone who didn't know Elvis. Not that you don't know who he is or anything, but that wasn't exposed to a lot of Elvis, like just through the culture and everything like that. But times have gone on, and I could totally understand that now. That's very interesting. It's almost like a Ready Player One, sort of like a filtered,
everything
down.
We do today, Mike, is Ready Player
One. No, but I'm just saying the way like references are thrown in that, like that's kind of like Elvis sort of.
Well,
like Xerox.
You've probably seen like 10 movies that Elvis is a character in. Like,
oh, he's, for sure.
Like Val Kilmer plays him in True Romance for 2 minutes. It's just like he's everywhere, but he's
Danny
also...
Danny Zuko was supposed to be Elvis originally.
That's right.
Greece.
Before we get too much further, I need to do a plot summary of Jailhouse Rock. We're back in black and white, Mike.
Yep.
Which I was not expecting. I was expecting, for whatever reason, just color here
color,
on out.
Color all the way down.
No, black and white. This movie is also not at all what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not.
All right, so here's the story. So Elvis plays Vince Everett, who is a physical laborer of some kind, gets paid, buys a bar, a round of drinks. A woman starts talking to him. Her man gets very upset that she's talking to Elvis. Elvis punches him to the point of
to
manslaughter.
Death. To death, yeah.
They go. So he gets between 1 and 10 years in prison. Elvis goes to prison. Of course, he is... cellmates with a guy who has a guitar.
It's a real Con Air situation.
The twist is that Elvis is not a musician.
That's right.
That Elvis's uncle or grandfather or someone was a musician. He sort of knew a song or two from, but it's the cellmate, this guy named Hunk, who teaches him how to be a musician.
For cartons of cigarettes.
Which Elvis does not understand, but soon, very quickly comes to realize when he gets the fresh fish haircut. But like, he just looks like a 2019 haircut. Like, it looks like a fine haircut, but like, that's the bad one. But
Beautiful hair.
Yeah, I can see why he was a real big hit with the ladies.
Also, Elvis is an asshole this entire movie, and I hated that.
he's
a dick.
The first two movies, he's such like a he's not so he's not a dumb person, but like he's like a just like a sweet, like very kind, gentle
he's
person.
A little mama's boy.
And then Loving You, he's like kind of this new to the music industry. Here he's just like, hey, I want money, I only need money, that's like, I don't care about money. And then he's unlikable. Like that's kind of the point of the movie. Like he's unlikability and the way he treats other people ruins everything, but like he's hard to root for at any point in this movie.
Yeah,
yes, agreed.
I did not appreciate that.
They play a couple songs in the prison, and then seemingly 20, 25 minutes into the movie, maybe, or half an hour in, he's out of prison and he never goes back to prison until not even to shoot a special. Like the famous Jailhouse Rock song, he's on a stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, what the hell is this movie about?
It's like a nationwide American Bandstand kind of special.
So what happened in the movie is that they film like an in-prison TV special or something like that. Later, like one of the next scenes after that is a prison riot, and Elvis punches out a guard. And I was like, oh, he's going to get stuck in prison. This is going to be the movie. But like almost the next scene is like, no, he's out of prison. I'm like, wait, what is happening? Elvis gets free. He meets a woman named Peggy, who's like a music promoter. She wants to sign him. He beats up a guy, or he like intimidates a guy at a bar who's laughing, who's talking very loudly and like sort of laughing at him. And I thought he was going to go back to prison. Once again, does not go back to prison. Peggy sold the tape that they made. Like she sold the record. They form their own record label.
Oh, they get their song stolen first. That was...
That's why they make their own record
label,
right?
That's why they make their own label,
because we're going to be in charge of everything now. They get a 60-40 split. Peggy's upset at the 60-40 split. I'm unclear what Peggy's role is in any of this. It seems like she just needs a woman around, kind of.
Excuse me? know.
I think she like runs his career, or yeah. Otherwise like he'd be back in jail.
She's doing a lot of labor that you don't see on screen, but trust me, she is a vital part of this operation.
I believe you, because like Elvis seems incapable of doing literally anything in this movie. He then meets up with a lawyer, Mr. Shores, who offers that he's like, "You a fan of music?" And Mr. Shores says no. And he's like, "Cool, you want to be my manager?" And he's like, "Not yet." And then eventually he is. But Mr. Shores is the smartest man in this movie. He like even knows what Elvis is going to counter negotiate with. Things keep going. Elvis eventually sings Jailhouse Rock. Hunk gets out of prison.
Yeah.
Gets jealous of Elvis's fame again.
They had a contract, remember?
Yes.
But it's non-binding.
Because it's a prison contract.
So he becomes his Pauly.
They get a record to, they get an offer to buy the record label. They're each going to make like a cool $250,000. Peggy doesn't want to sell out, even though Elvis is like, it's all about money. And Hunk, who is his cellmate, punches Elvis in the throat.
Yep.
It restricts his windpipe. They have to trach him. And then within a week, he's back to normal.
Two scenes.
He's fully healed. And then, he sings Young and Beautiful. Peggy falls in love. Movie ends.
Jailhouse Rock.
Here are the taglines. We do things a little bit differently on this because there's more research, I feel, or like there's more history here that I want to dig way deeper on.
Mm-hmm.
So here are the taglines for these movies. No name. It just says, his first big dramatic singing role.
Not true.
Not true. MGM presents, this is number two, MGM presents Elvis Presley at his greatest. Again, not true, my least favorite of the three movies so far. Number three, MGM presents Elvis Presley, Rebel of Song.
I was getting some Rebel Without a Cause vibes in this movie.
Yeah, definitely by him being an ex-con or being a convict is the bad boy sort
and of
thing.
And just, that like young, dumb and full of cum situation, to quote Point Break.
Of course. And the final one is Elvis in action as never before, even though this is kind of the same movie that Loving You was to a certain extent.
And it's not action-packed. Like, there's the bar fight, so maybe we had never seen him kill someone with his bare hands. Yeah.
So a little bit of backstory here. The band in the film is once again his real-life band.
Oh, nice.
So that's two movies in a row. The first movie, they did not let his actual band be in the movie. They're like, they don't look country enough, and he got upset. And then so the last two movies, the second and third movie, he has had his actual band in the movie.
Cool.
The dance sequence in the titular Jailhouse Rock,
which is great,
cited as his greatest moment on screen.
That's unfortunate if that's the case.
I don't know that that's true. Like, there's been Elvis as a ghost singing in the
graveyard. That's amazing.
Pretty great.
Yeah, I feel like it's already been trumped.
In the first movie, Elvis dies, and they screen the movie, and everyone was like, "What is happening?" And so then they have
a reshoot.
They go to his grave at the end. The family goes to his grave, and as they're walking away, ghost Elvis comes up and sings the song,
Love Me Tender,
to
the audience.
The audience, basically
as a ghost.
The family walks away.
Like Force Ghost.
And that's how
Elvis.
The movie ends.
Wow.
So that's amazing. Pretty amazing.
Elvis was paid $250,000 and got 50% of the royalties of the movie.
Whoa.
Like, he's getting paid for these movies. Because, without him, the movie doesn't get made, B, make money. So the saddest part, did you do any research about this movie or no?
No, I have a theory.
Well, the saddest part is that Judy Tyler, who plays Peggy, died 3 days after they filmed they wrapped shooting.
Oh, no, that's
She's
terrible.
She's so pretty.
She made three movies. I don't think Elvis has ever seen this movie. He said it broke his heart too much to watch it because she died 3 days after they wrapped filming.
And he can't watch Loving You because his mom's in that and she passed away, so he said he would vow
he's
to never
watch
that.
He's down to one movie so far.
And now he's only watch
and his mom can't watch Loving Tender because Elvis dies.
Because Elvis dies is like terrible movie night at the Presley house.
If Judy Tyler and her husband were in a car accident 3 days after this movie wrapped
horrible.
And they both died.
She's good in this too. She's got a lot
she
of charisma.
Beautiful eyebrows.
Yeah. Mickey Shaughnessy plays Hunk Houghton, his cellmate. He's known for his role in From Here to Eternity. Huh. But he's also a comedian who apparently once had like a 45-minute routine that just bashed Elvis.
What?
Was this before or after?
I think before. Unclear.
Okay. Because if this is a world where Elvis was like, yo, get me that guy who like does that 45-minute bit of me being terrible. Like, let's cast him in the movie. I love that.
You know that guy who hates my guts? Get him on in here.
A trend that we've already noticed, I think, in at least two or not all, maybe all three movies, but the beautiful blonde woman in this movie, Sherry, Jennifer Holden, this is her first movie. They're just basically like, you're beautiful, you're in this movie with Elvis now, which feels like that's what's going to be happening in every movie, probably.
Third in a row, pretty much.
Originally titled The Hard Way.
Oh, I like that.
Which is a cool title. Changed to Jailhouse Kid, and then eventually Jailhouse Rock.
Much better.
The first scene filmed is the titular Jailhouse Rock scene.
Okay.
Alex Romero, who created Moves inspired by Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly, and Gene Kelly was actually on set when they filmed this, and he watched it happen.
Yeah, I see that.
Elvis was not convinced by the initial choreography. They met up, and they wanted some extra moves, and then I think basically Elvis kind of choreographed a lot of this himself. Hmm. It's also been since confirmed by one of, if not the greatest acrobatic young dancers in the world, Russ Tamblyn. Have you seen that video? Do you know Russ Tamblyn? He's Dr. Jacoby in Twin Peaks. He's Amber Tamblyn's dad. Mm-hmm. There is like a 4 or 5 or 10 minute video on YouTube of Russ Tamblyn dancing. It is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. It is like, if you're really listening to this podcast, pause it and just go search Russ Tamblyn dancing. He's jumping on things and like pogo sticking off things that are not pogo sticks. It is incredible.
Oh, I gotta check that out.
That he helped Elvis, I think, choreograph this as well.
Interesting.
Well, so that feels most like an old-timey Hollywood musical. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's what I was expecting from Elvis movies all the way through from the beginning. But this is the first time we've actually got like a musical number.
Yes.
All the other times he's literally performing like on a stage as a rock and roller.
This was a very big moment apparently in the history of, I don't know if I call it gay cinema, but there's this guy, Brett Farmer, who's an expert in gay issues, according to Wikipedia, said the, quote, orgasmic gyrations of the dance sequence place that within a lineage of cinematic musical numbers that offer, quote, spectacular eroticization, if not homoerotization, of the male image.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely seeing a lot of this in, like, Bob Fosse's choreography, further down the road.
Also, you hear, you know, there's a lot of talk about prison and sexuality and stuff like that, but also it doesn't seem like they're trying to like hide it either in this movie. Like the camaraderie between the guys and the, especially during that dance sequence, it just like,
I'm very curious like if there's gonna be, and I'm guessing no, but like Elvis is like so, and this is something that like HTML that Nico and Kevo talked about like when the MCU is like, Elvis is so firmly like women all the time in all these movies, like has multiple partners, always like these love triangles. Like I wonder if there's ever going to be something more homoerotic than this.
Right.
I feel like probably not, but
who knows?
I mean,
we got 28 more movies or something to
watch. This was the only Elvis movie I'd ever seen before starting this endeavor. I think this is my least favorite time watching. I think it diminishes every time. At first, I was like, this movie's
awesome.
Where does
it rank of the three so far? Is this your least favorite, like mine, or is this, do you like it more than another one?
Well, I think just by virtue of like the Jailhouse Rock sequence and some of the songs, I think I like this second. I think I still like Loving You first, and then
Loving Tender is last.
I'm not sure. It's too early to tell.
During the performance, one of Elvis's dental caps fell out, became lodged in his lung.
Oh my God.
He had to become hospitalized.
In one scene, he's wearing a sweater while everyone else is in, like, bikinis and bathing suits. And I thought they were filming a movie in the movie, but no, he's just performing.
I do want to say that Elvis is shirtless in this movie, maybe for the first time.
3 times.
And he is so scrawny, and I'm like, we got Kumail looking like Kumail looks now. Have you seen the pictures of Kumail?
Yeah, I can't Kumail. Talk about it.
But that's another instance of, I felt like maybe that's another instance of, like, the homoeroticism is when he's in prison, shirtless, with his hands tied, and a guy whipping him.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's in there. I don't think it's trying to be cheeky either. I think it's like matter of fact.
So Lieber and Stoller, who I think wrote a lot of the songs, I think just a lot of Elvis' songs maybe in general, again, unclear. They were locked in a hotel room for 5 hours or something. No, 5 hours, hold on.
Like literally someone locked them in.
So they were like behind, they didn't have anything. They were confronted in their hotel room by the director of Hill and Range Music. They told them they had no material, so he locked them by blocking their door with a sofa. And they said they could not leave the room until they had created the material. 4 hours later, they had written 5 songs.
Whoa.
Wow.
They wrote, I Want to Be Free, Treat Me Nice, Baby, I Don't Care, and Jihad.
Treat Me Nice is so good.
I Want to Be Free, because they're like, they want to be free of this room. That's the first thing they thought of. Yeah, Treat Me Nice, I think. Well, we'll get to it, but we do rank songs a lot.
The movie earned a profit of a little over $1 million.
Nice.
So Elvis got his paid. It earned $3.2 million in the U.S. and Canada and $1 million elsewhere. So if he got 50% of that, he got, you know, $2+ million.
And this is like late 50s, right? Early 60s? When was this?
57. It received mixed reviews from critics. A lot of people, again, I think that's going to be probably true of everything. Like, people are just going to hate on Elvis for being Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people just say that, you know, only Elvis can keep, like, Elvis is the best part of the movie.
I still think, I will maintain that he's got talent. Like, as an actor, like, I think I don't know if this is the best movie for him, but I like what he does in most of his stuff so far.
Let's talk about the movie. Let's talk about the songs. The first song, weirdly, is not an Elvis song. It's not an Elvis song he's ever sang. One More Day that Hunk sings in prison. He's just like, hey, give me the guitar. Let me show you a thing. It's just like, why is this in the movie? What is going on?
And this is the second movie in a row where someone else starts off singing, aside from Elvis.
Yeah, what is happening?
I don't know. That's not what we came for.
No.
Like, I feel like they've fully transitioned now in the third film from Western to modern. If you remember what I said in the last movie is sort of half a Western. Yep. This one, they're making fun of country Western stuff, saying that's old, that's dumb.
Hillbilly
style, get that out of here. I don't know if it's, I mean, this is only one of my wacky Elvis theories, but I feel like it's a complete one now. Like we are, the next movie will probably have no hide, no hair of no Western nothing. So I just wanted to get that off my chest.
What's the next one?
The next movie that we're doing is King Creole. So the first song is One More Day. Any thoughts on One More Day? I think it's the only movie that are, it's the only song in the movie that I haven't heard four times or five times in the last day as I... Because you can listen to all... Like, one thing that Mike and I have talked about on these episodes is, like, there's six songs that Elvis sings that you can listen to in probably 14 minutes. Like, if they're all
super short.
two and a half minute songs, which is great. Like, it's just, you know, a car ride from here to there, wherever you're going, it's like, okay, cool. Blow through the entire song, the movie's worth of songs. So any thoughts on One More Day, a song that I barely remember?
Oh, I don't remember it at all.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I mean, my main complaint about this whole movie is too many ballads, and we're starting off with one like right here, because it's Jailhouse Rock. Like, I thought we were going to get lots of rocking tunes, and you know, and in the last one, we were really swinging in the last movie, so yeah, it was a little too slow for me.
The next song is a song, this is a trend that we saw for sure in Loving You, is the return of a song over and over again throughout the movie, Young and Beautiful, which I think is a really good song, but it's played at least three times in its entirety.
Another ballad. But plays a good one. But Elvis sings it.
This is the song that he learned from his uncle that he plays in prison, and Hunk's like, basically like, ew, what are you doing? Like, why, you're such a terrible musician. And then he plays it. I think that's the song that he plays when he gets out of prison on stage that he gets like laughed at or heckled during, sort of.
Oh, right.
And then it plays at the very, very end of the movie as well.
That's the song he sings when his throat is healed.
Then there's I Want to Be Free.
I might as well have never heard this song before in my life.
We have not touched on yet in any of the episodes, Mike, is that we're going to get into a gospel phase in his career.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this is kind
that's
of...
This is it.
This is like an intro into the gospel-y.
I totally forgot about that.
He gets, like, really gospel-y.
He's a super spiritual Elvis at one point, yeah. Now, this is nice. This is more up-tempo, you know. It's still slow, but it's, you know, it's upbeat.
Okay, now I remember this.
This is right before the food fight, right?
Don't Leave Me Now is at the recording studio.
Oh, yeah, but first he says...
Oh, this is I Want to Be Free. Hold on, I'm sorry. I Want to Be Free is... It's the TV show that they're filming, the music special, in prison. And then this is the song that he sings that he becomes a hit because and, like, he gets all the fan mail. Because girls are like, oh yeah, this is the good stuff.
He reads one letter that's like, I'm 15 years old. I was like, no!
So do you think it was a good idea for his cellmate to block all that fan mail? Probably, right? That was probably the good call. Not to...
Well, he's already an egomaniac. Like, what do you mean? What do you... I mean, are you helping anything? I also like that he's basically, like, rooming with, like, the one guy in prison who runs prison.
Oh, yeah, it's Red from Shawshank.
Yeah, he's rooming with Morgan Freeman, just like, oh, yeah, I can get you anything you want. Like, here's the cigarettes. Like, I'll loan you cigarettes. I'll just get a... You know, what's the vig on the cigarettes? It's like, what? Guy, like, I just got here. Pump the brakes a little bit. We skipped over this, but Elvis... Or Hunk plays the song, and then Elvis is like, hey, let me take that, and... Hunk says, you remember what Hunk says?
No.
Don't break any strings.
Oh my God, that's what he did in the last movie.
Because the last movie, Elvis kept breaking strings, and so they bought him his own guitar, and then the first song he sings is Lonesome Cowboy, where the whole song he's just gently drumming on the guitar. He's like, the guitar. So I just love that, like, it's, I guess, a through line now that Elvis is going to break guitar strings.
Oh, I love that joke. That's great.
We're going to see if that keeps coming up. Hunk tells Elvis, you'll never make a guitar player. You've got no rhythm in your bones. Like, this movie is just taking shots at Elvis, like, and I don't understand why.
Well, it's not Elvis. Funny? He's not Elvis. But, you're not separating
but he's
him
not,
from...
not Elvis.
No, but he isn't. But he is and he isn't. But you're not... it's supposed to be part of the joke, I think, is to be like, if you call that singing, like, who do you think you are? Elvis Presley? Like, I think that's part
like,
of the gag.
How famous was this guy, not Elvis, the other guy? Like, how famous was he and his whole, like,
the character,
Elvis,
you mean?
Like, his Elvis sucks shtick that he did?
Oh,
because the then if it's like the movie is referencing that, and like people at the time would have been like, oh, this is hilarious because we already know this guy, like, hates Elvis.
It's like meta commentary.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we've seen so far is that it feels like a lot of these movies are commentary on both the record industry, but also Elvis's rising popularity.
And his particular rise, like, his story his told over
rise.
And over again. Yeah, yeah. Overnight sensation kind of thing.
I was also getting really strong comparisons between Hunk and Tex from the last movie, who's just, imagine a guy named Tex, and, like, that's exactly what you're thinking about. Like, they're both just out to, like, take advantage of Elvis. Like, they're just, like, they both are, like, this older guy who's like, oh, this young kid has something. in the last movie it's more clear, but they're like, I'm gonna hitch my horse to this wagon and take advantage of him.
Because Elvis is the guy putting both of them out to pasture. You know, he's the next step. They're the old ways. And so, like, they have every right, I guess, to be upset about that, right? And I mean, I don't go throat punching or anything, but, you know.
Yeah, Elvis is just taking, like, swinging haymakers in this movie. Like, the guard, he murders the guy. How many people does he punch in this movie? He kills a guy with punches. He punches the guard, knocks him out.
Which, hold on, I just want to say real quick, like, I don't think, did you grasp how Con Air that is? Like, I think that's the only other movie I've ever seen that in, where someone goes to prison for beating someone up at a bar for manslaughter like that. It happened with Nick Cage.
But Cage, like, the reason Con Air is because, like, Cage is a military man, and, like, his hands are basically, like, lethal weapons.
I know, but it's technically the same thing, you know? It's anyone kills anyone in a fight, they go to jail. It's called manslaughter, to quote Brad Pitt from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm just saying, it's ironic to me, I think, that it's in an Elvis movie and a Cage movie.
Yeah, no, not yet, that's for sure. Like a weird, especially because we've talked about how, like, Cage channels Elvis in a lot of what he does.
And I have a theory that he rewatches a couple Elvis movies before filming a new movie just to get, like, back in the swing of things, but that's just my theory.
We have to look for more Cage connections, because it's definitely there. The next song in the movie is Young and Beautiful, which I think we played before, or we talked about before. This is when there's a loud guy laughing in the crowd, Elvis slams his guitar on the table, and then that's when Peggy chases after him and says, "Hey, you forgot something. Me." What'd you think of Peggy?
I think she's a really interesting character, actually, because here we are, it's 1957. Mm-hmm. She is this young woman who is out there on her own. She's like an A&R rep or something. I'm not sure exactly what her job is, but she is like she has a job, you know, and she's like out there working in these very male dominated environments. And I don't get what she sees in Elvis.
Yes.
I mean, yes, he's very handsome. He's also a total fucking asshole.
What's also weird about this movie is it's the first time in three where it seems like, it sounds like Elvis, but it seems like in this movie people are like, he's got no talent. It's just like, this is the first time we're just like, oh no, this kid doesn't have anything.
Because, yeah, I think they're really trying to get Elvis out of your head as much as possible in that sense of, like, who he really is in real life, you know? And it's like, how can we burn it into their minds that he's playing a character, right? Is like, say he's bad at singing. Say he's not, everything Elvis is good at, this character is bad at. If Elvis is likable, this guy's not likable. Like, I honestly feel like it's an overcorrection to, we just got to do as much as we can so they don't see Elvis, because that's all they're ever going to see, really. And you still see him. It still doesn't really work entirely, because he comes across as like too much of a jerk, almost like Woody, the first version of Woody that he redid for Toy Story. I keep hearing about that he was just like such an obnoxious jerk.
And he still kind of is in the first
And he still movie. Kind of like is in that first movie. Yeah. So I think it's a matter of that. It's like they're going to see Elvis. So we have to do everything else we can to say this isn't Elvis.
Because when he sings, or when he records "Don't Leave Me Now" at the recording studio, they play it back. He's like, "Oh, I hate this." It's like, "Oh." And they're like, "Well, how could it be better?" He's like, "Well, the song is good. It's just like I can do the performance better." Like, that's, they got to add more like heart and soul and blues, I guess, to it. Mm-hmm. But it's weird to like have everybody, not only everybody else kind of hate Elvis, but like Elvis kind of hates Elvis too.
I almost saw that a little more as like the artist, you know, kind of like listening like, back to yourself. Nothing's ever good. The perfectionist. I could do it better. I could do it again. And that almost made me think of, not that I thought this was a great movie, but there's the scene in the Queen movie when they're recording, the guy's doing the solo, and he's like, "It's amazing, it's amazing." He's like, "But I want you to do it again." And I think he says, like, you know, "Make it sound a little more like Queen," or something like that. And he goes in, and he just fucking rips it for the final take or something. So I wonder if it was a thing like that, where it's like, "I don't have my spin on it. Like, let me try and find my spin," or something.
Peggy sells the tape, and Elvis is upset because they're not making enough money on it quickly enough. He's like, "I don't care if you sold it. I just want to make money." It's like, well, step B.
This is the one they don't make any money off of, because it gets stolen.
Right, but like she sells it and then it gets, you know what I mean? But like he's not even happy that she's like doing her job for him.
She takes him to like a fancy party, or just like a cocktail party. These older people are sort of discussing jazz.
Yeah, what a weird.
And then they ask Elvis, "What do you think about jazz?" And he's like, "I don't give a shit," or so he's like, "I don't care about this lady, I feel stupid." And he gets up and he like storms out. And he's like, "Those people ask me about crazy stuff." And I'm like, I kind of love that he doesn't give a shit about jazz.
I do too. Finally. As somebody who also does not give a shit about jazz, I also appreciate it.
And how much jazz has been coming up, and how many white people have been trying to save jazz. I just love that even back then, Elvis is like, "I ain't into that jazz."
Elvis, who famously stole music from like black music, and
I know, it's ironic.
I love it. Like, it's just like, it's again your theory of like, let's separate Elvis the artist from Elvis the character.
Yeah,
because it's like, oh no, like that's not me at all. I hate this stuff. He and Peggy kiss, and I wrote down a quote. That ain't tactics, honey. That's the beast in me.
That's literally the only quote I wrote down.
I mean, that's sexual assault, actually.
Like, indeed it is.
Elvis.
And he kind of like, he just like walks away. He's just like, that's the beast in me. And then just like leaves. It's like, oh. All right. And then she like sticks around.
Yeah.
And she asks them later, are you only in it for the money? Hint, hint. The money is all you care about. It's like, yeah. And she's like, you motherfucker.
And then the song gets stolen. The record gets stolen. That's when they want to have their own record label. And I felt like Elvis had a really like an I'm the captain now type moment where he's just like, I'm in charge. I'm the one calling the shots now. And then they're doing the 60-40 split. And then that's when they meet up with Mr. Shores.
And what's hilarious about this movie is that like clearly Elvis just, or at least his character in the movie, just has no idea how the record business works.
No. He doesn't know anything. Yeah. He seems like a very blue-collar worker who then goes to prison, then becomes a musician, and is like, oh, I got this. And it's like, no, you don't know anything about anything.
Yeah, he has no idea how any of this works.
Isn't it kind of crazy how this is the exact same plot of the last movie, but it played out so differently? Like in that one, Elvis was smart, nice, and funny, and got taken advantage of by the female record executive who was kind of more nasty and mean to him and stuff. And this is sort of like the opposite direction of that, but everything else is almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
Except for the prison, like he gets up on stage and sings a song. She's like, you're amazing. I'm going to sell you to Hollywood. And that's exactly what happens. And they just go through the motions. And it's pretty much just like this movie.
Amazing.
Even makes movies in that movie too. We're like, we're going to make a movie now. Because in this, in Jailhouse Rock, they shoot a movie, don't they?
They shoot TV specials, I think.
But I thought they were shooting a movie.
It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, all right, cool. So we had that last record stolen. Now it's time to make a new record. And that's when they make Treat Me Nice.
This is a very, it really sounds like a Buddy Holly song.
Mm.
Which is somebody who I have like a much bigger relationship with. Like,
so did I, actually. Yeah. I knew way more Buddy Holly music and about his personal life, and I even wore his glasses in high school.
Who among us did not?
But that's not to say I don't love Elvis, but you're right. That just, yeah. I think it's the like Buddy stuff had less to it, really. Like, you know, he had a stand-up bass player, a guy with like three skins, and just him, you know, so it really felt, I don't know what to call it. Like,
stripped down.
Stripped down, exactly, yeah.
And this song, once again, is another like overnight sensation that begins as like a backing track for a dog food commercial on the radio. And then they're like, we cut back, they're like, so we've had so many callers, and it's like, woman's name, woman's name, woman's name, bunch of laborers downtown. It's like, oh, okay, so I guess everybody loves Elvis. So like, we're going to play that whole song for you because everyone wants to hear that Vince Everett song. So here's the song again. And again, it's the same thing as like Loving You. It's just like, we just heard the song. Now we're going to hear the song again.
Oh, that was so funny. Yeah.
No, it's because he was talking over it.
Yeah. But it's still like, we're hearing, like, as the listener, like, we heard the song.
Yeah, we just saw him record it, too.
Because, like, the last movie, he plays a song, and then they go on the road, and he plays the same song in the next town, and instead plays the same song in the next town. It's like, we literally just heard this.
It's literally, like, the entire song, because it's only 2.5 minutes.
Like, it makes sense in both, within the story of both movies, it makes sense. But within the movie itself, it's like, yeah, we just heard this.
Yeah, as an audience member, like, move on. This is redundancy.
And then this is around the time of the movie where Elvis, I don't know if he ever really, by the end, I think he has a thing for Peggy. But I feel like this is the time where he's just like, oh, Peggy's around. We should smash.
Yeah. Well, I feel like he feels like that around about all the women.
About everyone.
Yeah, maybe, it's maybe just like, oh, look, something that I can put a dick in.
Yes.
Like, it's not, it does not matter who it is.
And he actually does end up with someone in this.
Well, Peggy, yeah.
No, but I mean, instead of her, he's with that blonde girl for a while. So he's trying to, like, not be with her. And the movie's trying not to make them together, you know? And I wish they didn't end up together. It'd be more realistic.
He just wants action. I guess because he was in prison for, what, 6 months or something? Like,
no, a year and 2 months, right?
But yeah, like, it's still like,
yeah,
not
that, and he's 22 years old, and he's a successful recording artist.
He's just a dirty, rotten scoundrel, you know? Part of the whole package.
But Peggy is like, oh no, I got a date with Ted, who spun the record on the radio, because like basically he did us a favor, so I'm going on a date with him or something, or he's a nice guy, so I'm going on a
give a little head to get a little head, or however that goes.
And this is the point in the movie, like, you know, we're like an hour in, where I wrote down, I'm like, oh, so little of this movie takes place in prison. And I was like, this is not at all what I like, because
so you were expecting the whole movie to be, well, like,
so this was my expectation. But then also last time when we guessed, and I was like, it's going to be like Paddington 2 where he's wrongly imprisoned. It's going to be a movie about prison reform. You're like, you got it. And I was like, that's not this movie. Like, you sold me a bill of goods, Mike.
I sold you half a bill. I didn't mean to get your hopes up.
But then this is also like, I literally wrote down like, it's not in prison. And then like, as I'm writing that down, a hunk walks in. I'm like, oh, well, prison came to Elvis now. Like, Elvis is no longer in prison. But prison came back to the movie.
Or is Elvis forever in a prison of his own making?
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
Is that the jailhouse? Is that the titular jailhouse? His spiritual jailhouse.
Mm-hmm.
An hour and 5 minutes in, we get the titular jailhouse rock. It's on a TV show, not even in a real jail. Paddington 2 did it better. And also, there's such an artifice to it that it feels weird. Like, it
but
feels
it is.
So...
It's staged. It's a staged performance, like an old school musical.
Yeah, and the guys that are carrying instruments... The instruments are, they're two-dimensional.
Paper. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's all props.
Yeah. At first I was like, ooh, a trombone. And then I was like, oh, that's a two-dimensional trombone.
The only thing real
trombone.
Is a chair.
Well, it reminds me also, we were just talking about That Thing You Do, which is going to come out soon mm-hmm. on Hanks for the Memories, but like when they're at that beach party, they're playing instruments that aren't real. Like
right.
Steve Zahn tries to play the saxophone, like nothing comes out. It's just like, these are all props. Like it's all
yeah.
the artifice.
Yeah.
Literally every song in both of the movies so far, mm-hmm. and up to this point in this movie, it's all like, let's weave a song into the narrative. And here it's like, no, we're building a narrative to have a music video.
So what I think they're doing with that, my new theory, now that I'm done with the Western thing, is getting Elvis movies to be more like traditional musicals. Mm-hmm. So this Jailhouse Rock sequence is, I think, what we're going to be coming more to expect in later films. And like the only way they could really get it in this movie is if it was on a TV special, because he couldn't rock out like this in the actual prison in this movie.
Yeah,
you know,
I was wondering how that was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, so in order to get like that whole performance done, they had to think of a way to, oh, how can we shoot and stage this like an old, like a early 50s musical drama, like a Sinatra movie, you know, like mm-hmm. one of those kinds of things. And so,
which are all great. I would
insane.
Definitely do a Sinatra podcast.
His musicals are something else. Like,
they truly are.
Over the course of the next few movies, we're going to get less sort of like public performances and more of these extravagant sort of like
set pieces,
yes.
Like, it's weird to me that these movies are both exactly what everything else is, but also not. Like, it's a combination where it's like, this is exactly what we've seen, but also somehow like a new... I know they're only three deep, but it's already like, this is the pattern we're going to do.
Yeah.
How can we kind of twist the pattern?
It's going to be a bummer if they stick to this pattern exclusively. Like, he constantly keeps getting signed to record labels as an overnight sensation. If that's every Elvis movie, I'm done tomorrow, but I know it's not. You know, there's only so many stories, right? And we keep retelling them, but you switch the genre up, right? So it could be, you know, I feel like we've run into this before where we've seen that movie before, but it was a horror movie instead of a drama or like a comedy this time or something like that. So far with Elvis, like, we've got the same movie,
yeah,
but three different sort of genres of it. We had the Western, we had like the Midwestern,
the hybrid,
and now we have like the modern, quote unquote, modern for its age.
This is the part of the movie where Sherry shows up. She's like the new record label. She's the new starlet or whatever, and Elvis and her are smitten. They start filming a movie and they just like make out, and like he just ignores the director, and they're both like just super into it. Like they're just making out. But again,
wait, she's not into it though.
You don't think so?
No, he drags her to like all those
places. She's like,
no, I thought on the couch she was into it. Like when they're I'm just talking about the one scene, maybe not as a grand thing.
Does that happen before or after they go out on the town to get seen together?
Yeah, I thought it was after, because she was upset that they were no paparazzi, and therefore Elvis was a major turnoff because he kept taking her to like the zoo and the fair.
No, I think he's a major turnoff because he's an asshole.
And because he's a dick.
Like,
yeah, he's a macho
and also
prick.
Like, she like just has like a higher social stature than he does and whatever. So she just thinks that she's like too good for him, and she is.
Yeah.
She seems pretty into it when they're making out on the couch, but I don't, generally speaking, I don't think she was actually that into him.
The way that these movies work is that like there's a proposed love triangle mm-hmm. that doesn't actually materialize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then by the end of the movie, they just pick one of the women for Elvis, and that's who he winds up with. Like, it was the same thing in the last movie, where it's just like, there's two relationships that are kind of relationships, but neither actually is. Mm. And then all of a sudden at the end, he's just with a woman. Mm. And then here, it's like, he's kind of with Peggy, but not really. He's kind of with Sherry, but not really. And then by the end, it's just like, oh, they need the happy ending, he's with Peggy. Like, because it's not
she
exactly...
She was standing there.
Yes. Then the final new song in the movie is You're So Square, Baby, I Don't Care.
Oh, so
that's
good.
A song he's singing poolside in the movie.
That's the one with the sweater. The sweater song, I used to call it.
Which, you know, you're just referencing so many Weezer songs right now. You got Buddy Holly, you got
Buddy
the sweater
Holly.
Song.
Oh, yeah, this one's very Buddy Holly, too.
And this is also the scene where both of Elvis's ladies, quote-unquote his ladies or whatever, are both poolside. And I was like, are they going to be like an altercation? And there's not really, right? Like, they're just... No? They know about each other?
Yeah, they pass and say hi and
they're both very aware that this is a gentleman who fidelity is not a primary concern.
Yeah. And then the rest of the movie is what I mentioned earlier is that Hank gets, or Hunk, sorry, it's close to a real name, but it's not a real name.
No, Hunk, because people are hunks. Like, yes. You aren't called Hunk. Like, you're called a Hunk.
But apparently you are. They get the offer to buy the record label. Hunk punches Elvis in the throat because he's feeling upstaged by Elvis because, like, they go on tour or whatever, and, like, nobody cares about him, and he's like, I got to follow your act. Like, how am I supposed to do this? Which really, let Hunk go out there first, because, like, why are you making, why is Elvis not headlining?
And they cut Hunk from the TV special, too.
Peggy says something along the lines of, like, Elvis not punching Hunk back was, quote, an act of true love. And I was like, is it? She's so impressed by, like, the barest minimum that Elvis is not a complete dirtbag all the time. She's like, oh, you're growing. Mm-hmm. And then his throat completely heals in a week. They bring this band. He's got stage fright in front of, like, all of his close friends. And then he sings Young and Beautiful to Peggy. And then Peggy is smitten. And that's how the movie ends. A movie called Jailhouse Rock, where roughly 15% is in jail.
I think that's an over...
Probably.
Overestimate.
Maybe 10, 15 minutes. I mean,
it's not a lot.
I was surprised that it took an hour to get to the actual song, Jailhouse Rock, and, like, to perform. Like, an hour? And an hour in, like, 40-minute movie? Like, I expected it much sooner. I liked Hunk's two hound dogs that he had. I thought that was kind of funny. And I could have sworn Hound Dog was in this movie, but it's not. But maybe that was, like, an Easter egg or something like that.
So two questions about the songs that we're going to do every episode. Number one, what do we all think is the best song in this movie?
For me, it's crazy that it's not Jailhouse Rock. Even though we hear extra music that isn't in the actual record that's in this movie, like it's a little bit longer. For me, it's Treat Me Right or You're So Square. It's between those two.
I agree.
I might go with You're So Square. Baby, I Don't Care.
Treat Me Nice and Baby, I Don't Care. Okay. Like, I think Young and Beautiful is a great song. I think Jailhouse Rock's a great song. I don't know.
They're all great, but it's a personal preference.
And this is something that I don't know, unless you know the song, Kara. Are any of them as good as Lonesome Cowboy? I don't think that they are. I think Lonesome Cowboy is still the best song in Elvis movie so far.
Can you play that one for me? Because I think I know it, but I don't.
It's still my favorite, too, somehow. I never expected it to be.
This is the song that, like, they give him the new guitar. And that's not him playing the guitar. That's somebody else playing the guitar.
This is reminding me of the opening of Do You Really Want to Hurt Me by Culture Club. Like, at any moment, it's just going to be like, duh, duh.
I still think this is the best song in an Elvis movie so far, though.
I'm not sure if I've heard this or I've just seen Westerns.
Yeah, it
embodies a Western beautifully.
Like, he's just got that velvet tone in this one.
Like, I also think that this is, like, layered and kind of produced in a way that the songs in this movie, I think on purpose, are not.
Yeah, these are way more raw, way more 7-inch, like that. Yeah, that feels like an overproduced album cut, but for some reason, and I've been complaining about the slower songs, but that one is just so beautiful.
So now the next question is that, Kara, on a scale of 1 to 10, how forced into the movie are the songs in this movie? 10 being like, they basically just wrote scenes like, hey, we need a song here. 1 being, no, 1 is that way.
Yeah.
1 is bad. 10 is just like, oh, everything makes perfect sense, like, in the movie. I feel like that we're never really going to have, like, so far we've had a 6 and an 8, which is still better than I thought it was going to be. But where do we think we fall? 10 is like, oh, everything makes total sense. 1 is like, why are any of these songs in the movie? Keeping in mind that they're all built around showcasing Elvis as a singer, right?
Yeah, I mean, this entire movie is built around that one Jailhouse Rock song. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they, like, retrofitted a movie around that one song. If anything, it's like, why is this movie here?
Well, that's a good question.
Well, that's what I've been trying to figure out from the beginning, is why are they making Elvis movies at all?
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exposure. So it's like, well, we have this great song. Let's not leave it at that. Mm. Like, we have an hour and a half, and, like, everyone across the country, they not only will they hear that song.
And MTV didn't exist yet. Have, like, a music video.
Exactly, yeah.
So on a number scale, 1 to 10, we have a 6 for Loving You, or Loving Tender, an 8 for Loving You.
Mm-hmm.
7?
I would say 4.
Well, I think it's a little lower because of how she, what she just said, is how they, it kind of seems like they had Jailhouse Rock, they had that sequence, and it's like, all right, now how can we make a movie out of this? Like, what can we wrap around it?
I feel like that definitely skews this figure.
All right. So I'd say 4 or 5?
I'd say I'm going to go around 5.
Because there's a really good chance that we're going to have worse than this.
Oh, like, we'll have much
I know that, like, the whole narrative, but, like, there's got to be songs which is like the first movie, they have dinner, then they're like, well, you know, it's our post-dinner time to play a song.
It was before television and kind of, it was before radio. It was in the 1800s.
Gather around the fire. We'll sing a song.
Let's go on the porch and listen to Elvis. And
like... All right, so the next movie that we're doing is King Creole, right?
Oh, that's my favorite song right now.
So what do you think King Creole is about, Mike? Just in like a
Elvis
elevator
in
pitch.
New Orleans.
Okay.
Like in Big Easy.
Carol, what do you think King Creole is going to be about?
Like an oversized crayfish?
Oh. Okay. And how does that tie into Elvis? Just wondering.
Who knows?
Okay. Well, he could be a crawdaddy, right? Like he's like got a shrimping boat or...
I'm going to say Elvis wrestles an alligator.
I was almost going to go with the same one every episode, which is Elvis gets amnesia and doesn't know who he is. But I don't think it's ever going to happen. So I'm going to actually try and guess one of these one day.
Well, yeah, it's like you could play the game like the way that Joe 2 plays it, which is like, what does the title in, like make me think of?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, this is about the best Creole seasoning chef in the world, which again, it may very well could be. Who knows?
Bam.
So we're going to look now.
The actual plot?
Well, yeah, I'm going to look at the actual plot, but I'm also going to look up the numbers for like the stats and everything like that. So,
okay.
Jailhouse Rock, I think, is the, on Letterboxd at least, the most famous, the most seen Elvis movie of any of his movies.
The only one I'd ever seen.
Right. So it had a 6.5 on IMDb. King Creole has a rating on IMDb of 7. Ooh.
Ooh.
It's by far our best one so far. Seen by 4,100 people on IMDb, which is pretty solid.
I'm
showing.
Excited.
King Creole on Letterboxd. Jailhouse Rock at a 3.1. King Creole has a 3.4. This might be...
Oh, cool.
Could be our best Elvis movie. It's been seen by 1,325 people. So that's very exciting.
Ever. Only 1,300 people in the history of the world have seen it.
Yeah, like Marriage Story came out, what, 2 weeks ago, and like 100,000 people have seen it, but this has been out for 60 years.
I'm never going to watch Marriage Story.
Yeah, I would personally rather die.
Is there a way you could like just get that off your Netflix permanently if you thumbs down it like without watching it?
That's what we think King Creole is going to be about, either just New Orleans, an oversized crayfish, or wrestling an alligator. Mm. Any or all of that. I'm down for all of that. The only other news roundup we have every episode, I'd like to do a Riley Keough. Do you know Riley Keough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's Elvis's granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
I did not.
Yeah.
Oh, no? Yeah.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Lisa Marie's daughter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we do a Riley Keough news roundup here, and she is going to be in a new movie called Zola.
Yes.
Which is about that Twitter thread that went viral from the stripper in Florida. She does not play Zola, I don't think, but she plays like the best friend.
That's amazing. She's the only celebrity I follow on Instagram.
Well, Kara, thank you for joining us for Jailhouse Rock. I hope that this was a palatable first Elvis movie?
I mean, it was a little bit of a letdown, I have to
say.
I was kind of
like, this is a big, this seems like a big Elvis movie.
I thought it was going to be a big deal. You know, I have seen so many of the Frank Sinatra musicals, so I was kind of expecting something like that, and it was not.
Because I feel like there's three Elvis movies that are like, if we had picked before, like, these are the big three. It's this one, it's Blue Hawaii,
and
Viva Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Through one of them, it's like, oh.
Well, that's the weirdest thing is when I hadn't seen this movie in a couple of years, but I'd watched it twice and I really liked it. And it's the only Elvis movie I'd ever seen. And maybe it's because I've seen two more Elvis movies now. But coming back to it this time, it just felt flat and kind of slow in places that I didn't remember. And I just had more fun watching it in previous engagements. So, yeah, I can totally...
Well, at least Viva Las Vegas has Anne Margaret in it. And she's just wonderful to look at.
So here's what King Creole is about.
Ah.
So it's directed by Michael Curtis, who directed Casablanca.
Yes, I knew we were going to get to there.
And Angel Dirty Faces.
Mm-hmm.
It's also starring Walter Matthau.
Yes.
And Vic Morrow.
Oh, it's going to be good.
Danny Fisher, young delinquent, flunks out of high school. High school movie.
Oh, I got to call Brian.
He quits his job as a busboy in a nightclub, and one night he gets the chance to perform. Success is imminent, and the local crime boss, Maxie Fields, wants to hire him and perform at his nightclub, The Blue Shade. Danny refuses, but Fields won't take no for an answer.
Oh, he's going to get mixed up with the mob.
Kind of message Brian.
Oh, this is in a high school movie. I can't believe he's going to play a high school kid in his fourth movie as like a 25-year-old. This is going to be awesome.
But Kara, thank you so much for joining us. If you want more of Kara, listen to the current lap of Too Fast, Too Forever, or every other Thursday, Wistful Thinking. We are currently in Surf Month, which the episode coming out this Thursday is...
Point Break.
Very exciting. You referenced that on this episode, right? Like, I feel like today has been a blur. Jellicle Cat.
Yes, I did. I quoted Gary Busey.
Rum Tum Tiger. I got it right that time.
Tugger.
Oh, I got it wrong again.
You kept saying Tigger, but now you said Tiger. You're still wrong.
I can't. I'll never get it right.
Just think you won't get it right. And it's just the rum-tum-tugger.
Rum-tum-tugger.
There you go.
All right.
For all things Viva Pod Vegas, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, king@cageclub.me. Come back next episode, whenever it is, probably January, hopefully Colorado Space.
Yeah, I can't
wait. We'll be
wait.
Covering in theaters with King Creole. King Creole sometime probably next month, toward the end of the month, who knows? There's also the chance that, you know, there's a new surprise, other Cage movie or Keanu movie, or if Adam's Family comes out on Blu-ray, whatever's going to happen, you know, King Creole is the next one up, 1958's King Creole, before he goes to war for a couple years. I think this is the last one before his little break, so. After he comes back from war, he can't play high school anymore. He's been a changed man. But go to cageclub.me/shows, poke around, 26 shows, almost 1,400 episodes. Just go do that thing. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Carrie Gale Regan.
And we'll see you next time, whenever it is, for King Creole, right here on Viva Pod Vegas.
Warden threw a party in the county jail. The prison band was there, they began to wail. The band was jumping and the joint began to swing. You should have heard this knocked out jailbird sing. Let it rock. Everybody let it rock. Everybody in old cell block. Was a purple game.